come to order. We need to wait for Senator Bach. So when Senator Bach comes, then we'll take up number three on the agenda. Why don't we start with the audit? Look in your folder. We're going to try to take up the permanent joint rules here and the Senate rules, and the kind of drafts are in there, and it's pretty much we've talked about all this, so there should be no big surprises, and hopefully we can move through that. So let's start with the audit, but we might temporarily set it aside when Senator Bach comes so that Senator Ortman doesn't have to wait around all morning here. Welcome. Please.
I'm Jim Murray with Virchow Krause & Company. I've been here the last couple years reviewing your audit report with you. And I'll start like we have in the past. It seemed like you wanted to focus on the management letter more so than the statements themselves. So there's a report labeled management letter, and I'll go through that. And if you open up to the first page under the cover, we talk about a system of internal control. And with the new audit standards, as we've talked about in the past, we have to point out more things to you than we have in the past. So the bullet point down there, we point out that there were several material journal entries made to your records to bring them into accordance with GAAP for reporting. And I'll go over those on they're on page 8. And then since the auditor...
Senator Clark, we can hear you over here. Please.
And also pointed out in that bulleted area is the fact that the auditor prepares the financial statements, and that's a change with the new statements. This was in there last year, too, so it's nothing different than the prior year. But when the auditors are preparing the statements, we have to point that fact out, because in a true, fully functioning system, you'd be preparing your own financial statements. We'd come in and do an audit, and we'd give you the audit opinion. And of the governmental units that we deal with, there's only a handful that actually have the staff to prepare their own statements, so it's nothing unusual. So the next page, which is labeled page 1, material weaknesses, internal control over financial reporting. Here again, we're just talking about that we do prepare the financial statements, and that down towards the middle starts out the high-level internal control over financial reporting can be a difficult task for governments. So we just point out there that it's a common occurrence in governmental units not to prepare those statements. the next heading there, new auditing standards, statement on auditing standards 114. We talked about this last year. And as part of planning the audit this year, we had what they call more two-way communication up front. And communicating with senators, we'll send out questionnaires and things asking them if there's anything that they would like us to pay attention to, because as you know, with an audit, we're not looking at every single transaction. If there's certain areas that you may want us to focus on, we would do that. So this standard actually puts it in writing. I think Virchow Krause, we've always tried to get the government, the governing board involved with the audits. So this new standard really pushes the auditor to have more communication that way, to get your feedback. And through the year, if anything comes up, if you read through this, I won't bore you going through it all, but in essence, if things come up that concern you, you know, contact us. Let Eileen know. You can get our email addresses. We do want to have communication back and forth if you know, something unusual comes up, you're just not sure about something, we'd like to know that so we can plan our audit. On to page 3, and really D, E, and F there talk about things that we would like you to communicate with us, you know, significant communications with regulators or if there's suspicions of fraud or anything like that. And SAS 99, which has been around a while, we actually interview people and ask about fraud. Are you aware of fraud? That's part of every audit. So it's nothing unusual, and people shouldn't think that, oh, are they singling me out for something like that, but it's just part of the audit process. We have to ask those questions. Moving on to page 4. Current year comments, a couple items that came up during this year's audit. Physical security of physical services office. Part of the new standards, we're asking more questions about physical security records and that type of thing. And one thing that came up is the office is not locked if staff leave for meetings and that type of thing. So it's just something we think you should look at. Because there are social security numbers on documents and things that you don't want someone who shouldn't be in there going in and looking at records. And from our understanding, the reason that it is unlocked is somebody wanted to talk to somebody at one point and the door was locked. And I mean, staff, correct me if I'm wrong, but so, you know, as the auditor and looking at physical security, I mean, it just seems to be make good sense to have that door locked when there's nobody in there. The other point there, creation of an organizational chart. We think it'd be beneficial to have an organizational chart and then job descriptions that go along with that. So as new people come in, I know they have some of those records that just makes it easier for new employees coming in to fit into your job duties. The other section there, prior year comments, these are comments that we've had last year, and I'll just go through the status of them. The entering payroll data, a good system would have not have the same person issuing the payroll checks and going in and being able to set pay rates and things in there. So this year, in discussions with the staff, there are periodic checks in the payroll system to make sure that the rates in there are authorized rates. And they're doing that, but what they need to do is someone sign off or have a report that they're initialing that they have done that work. So we have something that we can look at to say, yeah, they have a log or whatever of those reviews. If you start doing that, then we can get rid of that comment. Senate phone bills, this has been in there for a number of years that we test phone bills to see that they're approved. And this year, there were about 22 senators had at least 1 month of long-distance phone bills that had not been approved. And that is a specific step that we've been asked to do as a part of our audit procedures. So, you know, the question came up last year, you know, why are you doing that? But, you know, in a normal financial audit, you probably wouldn't do that, but in the past, there was some problems there. That's why we're doing that. Documentation of internal controls. Last year, we had a comment about the new audit standards and we needed more so you're in compliance with the standards, so that comment will come out. And then communication to the Rules and Administrative Committee. This is that SAS 114 that has started out with. This is the communication that we have to have as a result of every audit. We have to lay out our responsibilities under GAAP and government audit standards. That's the first point. Our plan, scope, and timing of the audit. Significant accounting policies that we look at. Policies to worry about. Accounting estimates. Since in your case, you're really a department of the within the state government. You don't physically own your own assets. There's no appreciation or anything, so you really have no disclosures. Have any difficulties with performing and audit adjustments. So the adjustments for accrued payroll, cash basis through the year, and we're preparing the statements on a GAAP basis, which have to include payroll that's earned through your fiscal year and expenses that have been incurred through that year, but not yet not paid until in July. There were a couple, two invoices that we ran into this year for video equipment that were reported in expenditures in fiscal 08, but really you didn't take delivery until July of 08. So they were underneath what we call the materiality limits, so we didn't make an entry for them, but we have to point out what's called a past adjustment. Didn't have any disagreements with management. We didn't consult with any other independent auditors. Management representations, new standards say we have to attach that representation letter to this letter, which is in the back, and it's just a letter saying that you have provided us with all the records to audit, you haven't hidden anything, and that type of thing. But it's in the back of this document if you care to read it at some point. Independence, we're independent in conducting our audit, and again, we have to point out that we didn't prepare the financial statements and made some journal entries, and any other audit issues, and we didn't have anything come up. Audit went well. The staff does a nice job. So really, very clean audit, and no problems out to you at all. So are there any questions on that?
Okay, questions? Ms. Zoff, did you want to say anything at this point? Not necessary, but okay. Senator Frederickson.
Chairman, Mr. Murray, I do have one question about the physical security of the fiscal services office. Would it be acceptable to have that locked and e-reader? That would be easier for staff to get in and out with it.
Yeah.
The type of security is not important, it's just that they are, it is locked.
Yeah, locked if there's nobody in there, yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, that obviously is something we need to, we'll have Ms. Zoff think about that and make a recommendation to us. We don't have an organizational chart, apparently. Is that? It's not something you have to do right this second, but we probably should. This summer we should get an organization. Is that okay with members? Get one this summer? And then I think we need to figure out why senators aren't signing. I thought we had a procedure where everybody initialed or signed their long-distance phone calls. Anything staff can tell us about why that's not happening? Is that just...
Mr. Chair, Irene Munger, Fiscal Services. I don't have the senator sign the bills, but that's Marita Poole. And I know she sends out the bills.
So we need to maybe get a memo out telling people they're supposed to be doing that. Senator Irwin? Senator Clark.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's one of the things I was wondering is with the people who didn't do it, how many of them it's more than once or twice, and so that there was, you know, kind of a mistake. And is there some way, from an office standpoint, that somebody keeping track of who's coming back? I recognize that's kind of a bulky thing, but perhaps if somebody hasn't come back signed, it might be good to shoot them an email saying we need it signed.
Or maybe we could let the chiefs know on each side. We'll figure out something here that works, because it sounds like it's something that people just are inadvertently not paying attention to. It, so. PhoneGate. We had PhoneGate. And I don't, the entering of payroll data, we'll just need to have a discussion internally about that. And you've discussed that with our staff so they know what the issue is. And we'll just have to have some discussion about what makes sense. So you've got several options there.
And they're performing the checks. It's just a matter of documenting them. So as we come in as an audit procedure, we can see that someone has signed off on the log.
Okay. So members, sounds like the way to proceed here is at some point we'll have Ms. Zoff come back and talk to us about the various things in the letter here and see if we've got everything done. I would think the members of the school committee think that's an adequate approach at this moment. Wear gloves at the same time. So, but it's the type of thing that maybe we have moved beyond that because most people do.
Federal Department of Education. position that she has 18 green acre bills sitting in her committee, and that is, she indicated to me that is going to take her a lot of time to get through that. I think in the House the green acre provisions are unlikely to come in a standalone bill. I think they are most likely to come in the omnibus tax bill. That I think creates a problem for farmers out there that are trying to make some decision about whether they want to grandfather in land that's, they have to make a decision whether to keep some of their land that's currently not after the law changes in green acres, whether they're going to till that up and make a productive farmland to continue to qualify for green acres, or to enroll it in a grandfather provision, which has very punitive clawback provisions if they ever want to take it out. And Senator Skoy has spent a lot of time this session in both the Ag Committee and in the Environment Committee listening to testimony on the Green Acres provisions. I would argue these are tax provisions, and I don't quite understand why Green Acres is even in the Ag Committee. It's a bill related to taxation. I'd be surprised if when the original law was done, it was created in the Agriculture Committee. But there is some urgency to try to get this done. I mean, we can wait until, you know, May or June or whenever we're going to conclude our work. But there are people making decisions. You read in the newspaper about people cutting trees down, plowing up CRP land or because they want to keep it enrolled in Green Acres. Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy probably has more to add, but there is some strong reason to do this early rather than later. A lot of work's been put into this. There's been a lot of discussion, a lot of testimony. A legislative auditor's report last year that showed that the program prior to last year's changes, there was a lot of abuse. About 40% of the land enrolled in Green Acres is considered, I hate to use the word non-productive, but it's not tillable acres. It's actually actively being farmed. I think the Green Acres program kind of morphed into something much more than an agricultural reserve type program. So, Mr. Chair, it might be helpful for the committee to hear from Senator Skoy, but there is some reason to try and move this early in the session.
The Agricultural Committee heard the issue this year, right, and moved a bill of some sort?
Extensively. They moved a bill from Ag to Environment, where it also was heard and then was sent to Taxes.
So the bill that was heard in Ag, sent to
Environment,
heard in Environment, sent to Taxes, and this is what the Tax Committee has chosen to do.
And all along the way, Senator Skoy, it was Senator Skoy's bill, all along the way, people, I believe, were aware that ultimately the Tax Committee makes the decision on property tax policy. And Senator Skoy, being the chair of the Property Tax Division, has been very engaged in both of those committees.
Senator Metzen?
Yeah, let me just say, my portion of the bill was heard, I believe, it was heard in three committees. Senator Vickerman's Ag Committee, Senator Chaudhry's committee, and in the Tax Committee. And it was a bright sunshine of day. I mean, they were all, notification of all the hearings were out. The assessors were at two of the three meetings for sure. And so I don't know how many more stops you have to make, but my portion of it made three stops, and people testified, and it got put in the bill. So there was no sneaking around the corner or anything. You know, it was.
Senator Skoy, did you want to anything to what Senator Bach said?
Mr. Chair, what Senator Bach said?
Please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, what Senator Bach and Senator Metzen said is accurate. Both bills were heard in Ag Committee. I was there. Jim was there. We talked about both of them at length. My bill and also Senator Metzen's conservation program bill. Both were referred to the Environment. They've traveled together. We had at least 2 hours of hearings there on these bills, and they passed and went to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was at the Tax Committee meeting, I think, yesterday. I think our concern, at least maybe more personally, this obviously is a great big deal. We all know that, as evidenced by the number of authors. And, I think the Rochester Post Bulletin has probably had two front page exposés in the last 4 or 5 months on Green Acres. Initially, the notion seemed like it was going to come up on, you know, Thursday to Monday. And, you know, in my case, I was at a hearing. I didn't see the townships there. I didn't see Farm Bureau there. I didn't see Farmers Union. They may have been at the other hearings. I don't know. It just seemed to me to be a little empty in terms of input, at least from outside groups at the Tax Committee meeting. And, my plea, at least at the meeting, was for at least if we could defer this till the following Thursday. So we ourselves can take this bill home and have it vetted a little bit with people that we talk with on issues like this, I think would be helpful. But it just seemed to, at least on Thursday, seemed to be a little rushed. And, you know, frankly, if we could get it into, if need be, if it would be beneficial to get it to another committee, that would be fine. But if not, at least to hold it off the floor a little bit so that we can get some hometown input into this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm fine with taking it up on Thursday, but I'd be very reluctant to move it to the next week. I mean, every week more people file their income taxes, and accountants are watching this federal conformity stuff pretty close and would really like to get that piece of work done. Really, they'd like to have it done before the 1st of March.
Mr. Chair, may I just add, having said what I said, this may be the home run bill. I mean, I have no particular knowledgeable problems with respect to the bill and what it says. It just seems like it,
right.
For me, it just didn't, I wasn't getting enough input.
Okay. So there's two motions that could happen here now. One could be a motion to adopt the committee report, which would then just let the tax committee action show up on the floor on Monday. The other would be to amend the committee report and have it re-referred somewhere else. So what do members want to do here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like it's been where we would refer it to already. I mean, I don't understand. Is Senator Vickerman concerned about this? Or
he's not said anything to me. They're actually, just kind of full disclosure, there was actually, I think Senator Bach and Scoy's position is the bill shouldn't have been in agriculture in the first place. But because there was intervention by the chair of the Rules Committee, I said, is there a problem with letting him hear the bill? So we had a whole flurry. The bills were originally sent to the Tax Committee. And then there was a whole flurry of motions after that discussion that maybe why not let it be heard in agriculture? And Senator Bach then said, all right, fine, if they want to start in agriculture. And so all the bills then on the floor were all referred to agriculture. Then they heard us, the bills, and then they moved. Then I think it was actually sent to taxes, but then Senator Shadbury intervened and said, no, I want that in the Environment Committee.
Where they didn't do anything with it other than hear about the issue. But, Mr. Chairman, I think part of the problem is the legislative auditor's report on the Green Acres program, the report, was only heard in the Tax Committee. Perhaps the report should have been heard in the Agriculture Committee last year when it came out, or in the Environment Committee, so they could have had some of the information that the Tax Committee had about some of the, I mean, serious problems in the program. So they, I think, were probably unaware because they didn't hear the auditor's report a year ago when they, you know, probably should have happened there.
Chairman, sir, well, Mr. Chairman, I was curious if Senator Ortman wanted to make some more comments.
Senator Ortman?
If I could, Mr. Chair, just the concern I have is that this was not on the agenda for a bill that was on the fast track to the governor's desk, like the federal conformity bills. And so everyone had the expectation that this was a conversation that was ongoing. It was expected that it would be treated like every other bill at the Capitol, where it would be rolled into some omnibus bill, or there would be plenty of time and opportunity to talk to us about what people want. And now we've selected a provision, which might be a fabulous provision. I'm no expert, but I would say to put it on a bill that's going to be on the governor's desk next week doesn't give us the time to do that. And one suggestion that might not slow it down so much to be objectionable would be to just send it back to the Tax Committee and have a property tax subcommittee address these portions and then send it back up to the Senate floor, or even just the full Tax Committee. But to put this on the agenda so people know that it's attached to the federal conformity bill and it's going up very quickly.
Just with regard to the legislative auditor's report, the Ag Committee did hear this year.
Right.
And they passed this bill out and Senator Metzen's bill with it. They heard it that day.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the report of the Tax Committee. Be passed.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sinclair.
Is that a motion that suggests it keep on its current path?
Right. And I think Senator Bach's intent what he just said, what I kind of said on the floor yesterday was that come up on the floor on Thursday, not on Monday.
Mr. Chair, just to reiterate, what I found very strange, and I'm not suggesting anybody's fault, is this to have this very substantive legislation yesterday with without, as Senator Ortman's pointed out, the assessors, the Farm Bureau, the Farmers Union, the townships, maybe the county people, and maybe they were at the other hearings. I don't know. But it just seemed that some input into this by them at the tax committee would have been useful, and that we may be rushing this. It may need to move expeditiously, but I think it's also important that we have the input.
Sir Bach, is there time for the tax committee to have a more hearing on it? Or
well, I mean, it ends up putting conformity off another week.
Well, I was going to say, it's still get it on the floor Thursday. I don't know what your agenda is.
Well, I don't know how you would do that. I just don't know how you would do that. I mean, we'd have to get another committee report up to the floor. Tax committee's not meeting Monday, so we couldn't get a committee report back to the floor before Thursday, which would put us into next week. I think that's problematic. You know, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we have been looking for, we just can't put this on any bill. It needs, I mean, this is a tax item, and it needs to be germane to taxes. And we were just fortunate the House sent us a tax file that we could put some property tax provisions on. And that's not easy for them to do that. They spent hours on the floor getting us this federal conformity tax file. There probably won't be another opportunity to get this done before the end of session. And that assumes, members, that we're going to have a tax bill. And I don't know how difficult that's going to be to negotiate with the governor. But I think there's a possibility that we have to resolve balancing this budget without a tax bill, which would mean the current law on green acres is what's going to stand. And I think we all realize there are some unintended things that happened in last year's bill. This is our opportunity to correct them. And absent this House file, that may not get done this year.
Senator, do you want to add anything?
Mr. Chairman, members, I understand that the pressure. We have to balance between the need to pass the federal conformity bill against the public's interest in hearing this bill. And I think postponing for 1 week is not a lot to ask so that people can participate in this discussion and understand how quickly these law changes are going to impact them. I think one extra week or 4 days to push this into next week, the following week on the floor, is not a lot to ask so that we don't violate that public trust. We have the opportunity now to fix that.
But Senator Ortman, there were hours and hours of hearings in two other committees on this topic.
Mr. Chair, I'm not trying to be argumentative.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but it's not that somebody hasn't had an opportunity to testify on this topic. They have, apparently.
But with no awareness that these tax changes are going to be made immediately attached to the federal conformity bill. I think everyone that was testifying saw 14 or 15 bills and they weighed in on the concept, but not necessarily on this particular provision. And so this one is crafted, it's been attached as an amendment and not noticed as the final result. And that's what we need to project out and communicate, is that this is it. This is where we're going for the next few years. And if you want to weigh in again, you need to do that. There's no opportunity. We didn't put anybody on notice to do that.
Senator Ortman, that happens on every bill around here when it goes to a new committee.
Well, but this didn't appear on an agenda, Mr. Chair. Not on a tax committee agenda. Only the federal conformity. So you wouldn't have expected it to be attached to this and put on a fast track to the governor's desk.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me just say, people can offer amendments, and as the chair, I don't have a clue when we schedule a bill what kind of amendments might come, nor do I have the authority to tell somebody they don't have the opportunity to offer an amendment. And I think, all chairmen find themselves in that same situation. We wouldn't know what the committee notice should say relative to any bill that we schedule for a hearing.
We have the Bach motion before us. Further discussion. All in favor of the Bach motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Workman.
Thank you for hearing me.
Senator Skoy, thank you. Okay, then we have the third item on the agenda. Senator Bach, we should probably, you're thinking that on Thursday you would want that to be a special order, or could you do it on general orders? And then it would be passed finally on Monday? What is your thinking? Is the urgent, would you like to get that out here on Thursday?
Well, the federal conformity provisions are quite a bit different than the House. And I suspect we're going to end up in a conference committee.
Your request will be a special order.
I think the sooner we get it done and we try to get ourselves to conference and resolve the federal conformity differences with the House, the better.
David. Just a brief recess.
Okay,
maybe you'll come back to it. Okay, so you're thinking that you're going to request a special order?
Likely.
Okay. Let's then look at what do you want to do? Joint rules first? Why don't we do joint rules first? We have old SCCR 002. What we need to look at is amendments to the current rules. There are rules in effect, and this would be amendments to those current rules. And Mr. Watson, why don't you just go through those quickly? And we've talked about all of these things in the committee in previous meetings. Senator Mr. Watson, page 5, it looks like it's the first one.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And on lines 515 to 518, you see a requirement that a bill containing a constitutional amendment not contain statutory language not related to that constitutional amendment. This was a proposal from the House, and I don't believe that we've talked about that in the committee.
We have not.
Did we talk about that in this committee at our last discussion of the rules?
Okay, well, let's talk about it now then. Sounds like a good idea. I thought we had talked about it here, but it's basically it avoids, then we have the transportation constitutional amendment in the transportation bill 1 year.
Yeah.
And it just seems like, we've historically tried to keep them separate, but I think this would make sure we keep them separate. It just seems like a good idea. Discussion. Okay. What's the second item?
Mr. Chairman, the second item is also one that came over from the House. It would, on page 6, lines 16 to 20, impose a deadline of 10 calendar days after the governor's budget was submitted for state agencies to be introducing their state agency bills. If a bill came in after that date, it would have to be referred to the Rules Committee, and it couldn't be heard then until after the Rules Committee approved its introduction as a late bill.
This really would not have much effect this year, but the idea is to, I think we've slipped a little. It used to be that when the governor used to give a budget, this is not just Governor Pawlenty, this has been kind of slipping over the years. When I first got in the legislature, the governor's bills actually showed up when he or she presented their budget so that you could start working. And I think over the last 15, 20 years, it's kind of slipped. And now it's gotten to the point where sometimes we don't see the language until a month or two later. And I think it makes it hard for the legislature to get its work done. So this is not intended to be a point made about just this current situation. It's kind of been a long-standing slippage. And I don't think this rule would really affect this year right now, because we're kind of past this point. But if we could get this into law, it might help us next year.
Chairman, just think a little bit about this.
Or in the rule.
The governor's budget is based on the November forecast. When we get the end of February, first of March forecast, and there are changes to that.
Right, but when he makes his budget address, the expectation is that we start working on his budget. And if you don't have the language, it's kind of hard to start working on the budget. Now, he may have to make changes to it by then. When I first got here, they used to kind of do this all simultaneously. They would make their budget address and hand us the bills, and we'd get to work. That's 25 years ago.
I realized, too, that over the years, various governors have been very late in some of the bills that we want to use, too. I concur. It's not just
right. It's not just government land. I think it's just been a general slippage from the executive branch, so I view this more as a executive versus legislative issue. Senator Bergman?
Well, this has been a problem in the Health and Human Services area for a long time. In fact, I amended the rules at one point in time so that they would have to introduce the bill at least 3 weeks before the deadline. I mean, honestly, there was a year when we were sitting there in policy committee with a very major change to the personal care attendant program, and they were presenting a bill that I had not even had a chance to read. And while they were presenting it, they were having a delete everything amendment drafted in the next room, so our Senate counsel wasn't even at the table with us, that they were going to present whenever it got ready. And I just don't think that's a very good way to be doing business, so that's why we put the rule in effect that it had to be at least 3 weeks before the deadline for hearing bills. I mean, if we can do it sooner, that would be better, of course.
Senator Bach.
Well, I'm just wondering about the language. It says all bills submitted. I just kind of wonder if it shouldn't say all bills related to the budget. For instance, I think revenue is going to come with a bill addressing federal conformity provisions. The tax committee probably could consider that as a result of the stimulus bill that was passed, they couldn't have possibly met that criteria. And I think departments do come with things from policy things from time to time that maybe take some work before they're ready to go. But I think narrowing it some to get to more of our intent might give us all a little more flexibility.
I actually was going to say two things. First off, I think this will help the administration in the long run. They've often had some challenges between different departments that need to touch things and getting things out. And I've heard from them on several occasions just about how some things can get clogged up. Sometimes having a hard and fast time can make a difference. And I don't
like
think
May 17th.
Yeah, I think I would want to go as narrow. I appreciate, Senator Bach, what you're saying. The agency bills come to my office, and they've been working really hard again to speed those up. But this is after the governor's budget. So, I mean, obviously the economic recovery is an exception, and maybe we need to figure out how to deal with that. But we have worked really hard in the last couple of years, again, to speed that up. But, again, there are times where there's bottlenecks internally for them. So I'd be a little concerned that both of their initiatives, where our committees need to be seeing those earlier, agency bills and the budget bills. Maybe, perhaps, the tax bills need to be handled separately.
I have a couple thoughts. I'm wondering if after all bills, we could interject something like necessary to implement the governor's budget must be. And then where it says introduced, rather than say introduced, say delivered to the legislature. And again, not on line 17, delivered to the instead of introduced, delivered. And then delete referred and put presented.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, we don't actually have a formal process to know when a bill is delivered. The only way we have a way to know when something's happening is when a bill is introduced.
But the governor can't introduce a bill.
Right, I understand.
If someone chose not to introduce it, that's not
well,
fair.
I understand that, but a bill can't be considered by the legislature unless it's introduced.
Right, but the governor can't control that.
Mr. Chairman, my thought was that I think all the bills now go to Senator Clark's office and her
not
office.
Not all of them.
No, they go to just the department bills.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, they've sent the budget bills this year. A lot of bills come to my office. A lot of bills come with their initiatives that come somewhere else. I think what Senator Frederickson is suggesting, though, makes a lot of sense, because that means that it's hit the ground. It's landed somewhere. It's landed in a senator who will be carrying it, or a senator that's going to be touching it. And that way we're also, you know, I think that we are all, you know, honest brokers. But if there's a glitch and it takes a while before it gets introduced for some reason, that's not the governor's fault.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would tend to just disagree a little bit, because it is their responsibility to get their bills introduced and to get authors for their bills. And no committee can act on a bill that's laying in somebody's office that hasn't been introduced. So, you know, I mean, you know, if they need longer to get it introduced than to deliver it, then maybe we should have a longer time. But
yeah, Mr. Chair, it is kind of a hybrid. I think that what, again, you know, Senator Berglund, I think what Senator Frederickson is suggesting is that it's come here, and certainly our goals are, regardless of who's carrying the bill, to get it in. Now, that might mean that there's some bills that the governor has that on both sides of the aisle, though, there's been bills that have gone to a member who is going to introduce it, but sometimes they don't introduce it. That's not the governor's fault, but we have actually seen it.
Well, in the case of the governor's tax bill, for whatever reason, whether that came from Senator Clark's office or directly from revenue, I don't know, that came to me. And I mean, I'm not interested in carrying the governor's tax bill, so I had it sent in her office over to Senator Ortman, who's the lead Republican on taxes. I don't know if she's going to introduce it. I mean, I don't believe that it's my job to find an author for the governor's bill. I mean, I think...
But I think the point is,
I think the governor loses control of introduction. I think the word introduction is a problem.
I do too. I think Ms. Watson, read Senator Frederickson's suggestions again.
Mr. Chairman, on page 6, line 16, after bills, insert necessary to implement the governor's budget. And delete introduced and insert delivered to the legislature. And on line 17, delete introduced and insert delivered to the legislature.
Senator Berglund, I think that works. Because all we're really trying to do is get the information. And whether it actually ever gets introduced or not may not be as important as actually having language that allows you to work with it.
Well, if it's never introduced, the public never has the language.
Okay, but that's a different matter then. Then you can say, I don't know why we're even considering this. It's never been introduced. But I thought what we're trying to get at here a little bit is allowing the committees to start working once they know what the governor's budget is, because they have actual language that tells you what it does, because sometimes the devil's in the details.
But a committee doesn't have the language if it's laying in somebody's office. That's my only point. Like... Do I have to, you know, as chair of a finance division,
I got you down here too.
The governor's budget that's got language that might be a problem. Do I have to scour the Capitol to find out who's got it? I mean, you know.
But I'm just one dimensional. It's just all of these guys.
This date.
Oh, I did another one.
And you don't have the
Lindsay.
A letter goes to the governor that says,
oh, she's not here today.
Where's the language? The governor presumably then would say, I gave it to Senator Frederickson.
He pulled out this sheet and said, I sent it over on the 4th of March. And they went
and
to
I may not, and he might not know who has it either by then.
Well, let's assume we can.
Yeah, let's assume. Let's
Mr. President, I wonder about the enforcement of the rule, that second sentence.
Exactly.
When the president receives the bill and is referring it to committee, how does he know that this bill was delivered after the deadline and should be referred to the Rules Committee rather than to some other committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mr. Watson, you're assuming that this would go into effect after the bill was heard and is on the Senate floor ready for action. I assume this meant that the bill is delivered to the legislature on April 1st, and before it can be introduced or proceed, it would have to go to this committee.
You know? What if we take the first part of your amendment, which says that it has something to do with the budget, and then maybe we should leave introduced, because the only penalty is here is when it's introduced, it has to come to the Rules Committee. And then the Rules Committee can decide whether it was timely or not. So maybe we're getting wound up here too much. Because it doesn't mean the bill can never be heard. Just as the Rules Committee is going to decide whether somebody gets it. And Senator Bergman is right. If the bill's never introduced, it's kind of like...
Chairman, you're right, but that's out of the governor's hands, but it's delivered to us.
That's true, but
it's out of the executive's hands.
But the governor's talking point can then be, look, I gave the bill, they have the language, and if Senator Bergman really wants the language, here it is.
Right, but my point is, if I have to take a page out of the governor's budget that people have concern about the language, and nobody's ever introduced the bill so the public could see the language and give us feedback on it.
It's a problem.
Then I put it in a bill, and it's never been introduced. It's never been given a hearing, and the public's never seen it until my committee bill's introduced. And I, you know, gosh, that's the last point in the chain of things where we want to be getting public input that something isn't right.
Mr. Green. I think Senator Berglund's point is very well taken. I don't think there's been any bills in the last 2 years. I can't speak to the governor's special initiatives because those get floated around elsewhere. So that could be definitely a challenge there in Berkeley. But there are definitely times where people don't want to take the governor's bill for some reason. And frankly, they end up, there's kind of a hybrid between the people making recommendations. Senator Frederickson, for example, carries a number of their bills. But there's always an author found. And one of the things that I was thinking is, in general, certainly with the bigger bills, chairs get a chance to decide first. Often goes to the lead. But one of the things that might streamline some things, too, is making sure that copies of the things that come in from the governor are made for both the chair and the lead Republican, and make sure that they're sent off, too, so that you guys have all of those. But the bills are always, I can't think of any that actually fell through the cracks. I do think that the second part, actually, as you were suggesting, Mr. Chair, leading it is, introduced probably
wasn't
a good idea.
Sure, allows you to enforce it.
Yeah.
Why don't we break it, Senator Frederickson? Could we take your first change first and see if Mr. Watson read that first change?
Mr. Chairman, that would be page 6, line 16, after bills, insert necessary to implement the governor's budget.
All bills necessary to implement the governor's budget. Yes.
Well,
at this stage.
No,
Mr. Watson.
So it would read, all bills necessary to implement the governor's budget submitted by a state agency or department must be introduced within 10 calendar days.
Okay, does everybody understand that piece?
Must be delivered.
No, we're not doing that part yet. Just this first sentence. Okay, so on that part of it, saying the budget bills, basically. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion's adopted. And Senator Frederickson, did you want to press that second issue or just leave it introduced?
Mr. Chairman, I sense that introduced would work, but I'm wondering if we should go to 15 days or a few days longer, because by the time that a member gets the bill, talks to 3 or 4 other members to see if they're a co-author with them, 10 days isn't very much time. That's almost immediately after the budget.
15 days?
15.
Anything will be an improvement. So Senator Frederickson moves on line 616 to strike 10 and insert 15. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passed. Okay, anything else on that one? All right, what's the next?
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bond.
Maybe to Mr. Watson. On line 6.17, a bill introduced. Is that in reference to the bills above, or is it just any bill introduced? Just don't want every bill to come to rules. It's introduced 15 days after the governor's budget comes out.
I wouldn't want to say such a bill.
I wasn't going to suggest that either.
I think it's pretty clear we're referring to the bill that is delineated in the first sentence.
Could say a bill subject to this paragraph or something, but it's necessary or not.
You can context it. Is clear enough that that's the kind of bill that we were referring to.
Okay. And the president's sitting here and he hears that, so. Okay, let's go to the next.
Mr. Chairman, the next change is on page 7 on line 12, saying that where conference committees are being announced as far in advance as possible, the intent is to provide a 24-hour notice, is another proposal that came over from the House. The language on lines 17 and 18 is language that you discussed a couple of times, I think, at previous meetings, but the House proposal added holidays as well as Sundays accepted. Then on page 8, lines 11 and 12, authorize the copy of a conference committee report that must be placed on the members' desks 12 hours before action by the House, could be an electronic copy. That's the way the Senate's been interpreting the rule these many years.
Just one thing, and that is, if the chairs are going to rotate every 24 hours, then essentially you'd have to give notice immediately upon the rotation of the chair. And I mean, if people want that, that's fine. You know, what will happen is people just say there'll be a meeting, we're announcing a meeting, time to be announced, because they can't possibly know exactly what time they're going to meet when they've just gotten done switching over the gap.
Yeah, I think we should take the 24 hours out. I think that gives an unrealistic expectation.
It's not going to work, Mr. I mean, you adjourn in the evening and you can't convene until the next evening? I mean, unless there's enough
Well, it's an intent issue. It doesn't force you to do it, but I think creating an unrealistic expectation, maybe.
I mean, what will happen is there'll just be a standing announcement that we'll meet, but the time will be to be announced.
Yeah, the committee's on call type thing.
Right.
So why don't we take out 7 and 12?
Just for us to think about, we have not had an issue in this body with chairs rotating.
I know, but the 24 rotation, the standing thing in the Senate will be, I hope, meeting. So this is a big step. If we can get 24-hour rotation, that'll probably resolve many of the issues. It seems to me line 712 is not overly workable.
Yeah.
Berglund moves to delete the new language on line 7.12. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I should have noted on page 8 that the electronic copy language is what came over from the House. That was their request.
That seems like a really good idea. I think we've actually kind of slipped into that a little bit, but next,
Mr. Chairman, page 9 on the election of regents, there are some changes to the language, not of the joint convention, that what's going to happen on Monday, but rather the joint committee that happened earlier this week. And that was to, and this is something that the Rules Committee has discussed a time or two in the past, and Senator Pappas has had discussions with the House And Senator Pogemiller has also had further discussions with the House, so now this is something worked out between the two. With advancing the deadline from May 7 to February 28, changing the membership, this is actually making the rule conform with the statute that was enacted in 2007, changing the membership from the House and Senate Education Policy Committees to being their budget divisions. And on the next page, requiring that a person to be nominated had to have the support of at least 3 members of the House and 2 members of the Senate, and then the actual recommendation by the Joint Committee would require a majority vote of both the House members and the Senate members. That's on lines 11 to 13. Line 8 and 9 are, again, from the statute and limiting the committee to recommending just 1 person for each vacancy. A difference between this language and the language of the statute requires that there be at least 2 meetings at least 1 week apart, and this rule would eliminate that requirement.
This seems to be where the higher ed chairs have kind of settled.
Is there a change on 10-10 through 10-13 that's stricken as just a majority vote of the members of the joint committee?
Yes, it's from each side.
From each side.
Yes, so it's like a conference committee. That is how they just operated, apparently, the last week or so.
That's what the statute operated.
Oh, and that's what the statute.
Okay.
Is there anything in the rules now that prohibits someone from being nominated unless they have the support of 3 members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, that's another thing that's in the statute.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. We just did that.
Okay. Sounds like everybody's pretty comfortable with all this. Senator Marty, you wanted to, I think your suggestion is related to the joint rules.
Yes. Yes,
welcome.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And members, I think we looked at this language the other day. Is it in the packet here?
It's A11.
Okay. We'll grab it here.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I was unaware of the last meeting, so I apologize if I was supposed to have been here then. I have a couple of proposed changes to the joint rules related to the open meeting law and
Mr.
open
Chairman,
meeting.
Do we have the language?
Two changes to the open meeting law and open meeting rules. And the first of them relates to conference committees. And the point of all of both of these amendments are to make it something that conference committee and budget negotiations are open to the public. And I know that that's seen as it's a very difficult thing to do that way. I'm told and understand, and several of you were here in the 1970s, that the 1970s for several years, conference committee negotiations really were done as part of the formal open conference committee. But this would simply say that from the time during the duration of the conference committee, negotiations between House and Senate members would be open to the public. And we clarify that explaining a bill is not negotiation. It's, in other words, you can say your position or whatever, but if you're doing the back and forth of negotiation, that would be required to be open to the public. And the second provision, and I'll explain some arguments for this in a minute, the second one relates to negotiations between leaders of both houses or meetings with the governor in which negotiations on the state budget or setting targets is done would be open to the public. And my argument for...
Let's stick with the first one.
Oh.
We don't have a copy of the second idea yet.
Okay.
We'll get it in a second. Let's go with your first one, which is lines 1.17 to 1.21.
We need to get copies of that.
That's
on our version.
Okay.
A1.
Okay.
It's the, from the time the conference committee is appointed until disbanded language.
Right.
We have a copy. It's not the same version.
Okay.
It's the language.
Okay.
Well, let me read it to make sure it's the same language. From the time of conference committee is appointed until it is disbanded, any negotiations between the Senate, the House of Representatives, members of the conference committee, or Senator, House of Representatives, staff members related to the conference committee, or the bill referred to the conference committee must be open to the public. Okay.
There's one more sentence after that explaining a provision of a bill is not negotiation unless the provision is in dispute. And Mr. Chairman, members, the
Mr. Chairman, and there's a line on the next page.
The chair of the standing committee or division of the Senate or House of Representatives, that must be. There's a page missing.
There's a page missing. We're getting copies. Mr. Chairman, we are getting copies of the correct amendment.
Of the actual amendment.
Yeah,
okay.
The 11.
Mr. Chairman, this is getting a little bit confusing. Should we wait? How long will it take to get copies?
Well, they're making copies, but he can talk about this language.
I can explain it, the argument for it. In the 1970s, early 1970s, when the DFL party took control, one of the ideas that was pushed heavily was sunshine laws, let the sunshine in. And my understanding is prior to that, even regular committee meetings were closed to the public for most or all of state history. And the idea that government should be operated in public, before the public eye and public scrutiny, is a valid one and a very important one. And I think that's the genesis of the push for the open meeting law for local governments and for these rules for us at the state level. And I think that's a very important idea and concept. And here the argument for these being closed, which they were later on, it was, I guess, a sort of a formal moving from we're going to have the work done in the open meeting to, you know, hey, if we meet on the side, negotiate between the chairs or members. And from the year I was first here, I remember it was done, often was negotiated in private as long as there wasn't a quorum of both sides present. But it had slipped into that. And when people say, well, this is so important that we've got to do it behind closed doors, if the concept is that it's important to do it in public, the public's business in public, for smaller things, for regular policy bills and for other provisions, it seems that the same provision, the same rule, same concept ought to apply when we're dealing with some of the most important budget decisions and the difficult negotiations that often occur. I realize people say it can't work this way. Well, it did work this way for a while. It is awkward. I think it's human nature, perhaps, to want to close things off, and we have to do things in private. But it was done in public for a while, and the same reason we wouldn't want to close our regular committees to the public is the same reason that we should be having the negotiations on some of the most important provisions we're dealing with be in the public.
Mr. Chairman, Sir Martin, this applies to all conference committees. There's always the emphasis on budget conference committees.
Right, right.
But this applies to all conference committees, correct?
Right.
And what about – so I understand formal meetings and even formal negotiations, but hypothetically I see a House counterpart in the hallway. And we say, by the way, that provision, you know, what we ought to really do with that. Do you anticipate exceptions to the rule like that, or how do you prevent then that kind of system then lapsing into taking over the rest of it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, the issue with something like this, it has to be something that's largely self-enforced. And I think members of the House and Senate, when the rule is out there, I think they try to do that. There are – let me take some examples of conference committees that aren't complicated. There are many times when there's really – sometimes there's no dispute. The House is put on some – we often say, well, we'll fix it in the House. And you have two different bills and everybody agrees to it. Sometimes the House author says, well, this was put on because of such and such reason, explaining it and so on. You may not even have – I think you're supposed to have formal conference committee meetings for all conference committees, but I think sometimes it's not done, and the understanding is it's just kind of – we all agree to it. It's not a controversy. And the fact that you might run into somebody the hope would be that people are trying to comply with this to the extent they can. And yeah, if you run into somebody in the hall and they say, you know, I really hope this is – be the case. If you intend to make it sort of a, well, what about, if it becomes a controversial thing where, you know, no, we don't support that, we'd be willing to look at this. At a certain point, you as a conference committee member or author of a bill are going to be talking with people. And that's why we want to make sure that explaining it, explaining provisions, positions on a bill are not negotiations, and it may be persuasive. I mean, you may be persuaded, but when there's actually back and forth negotiation, I think that that's the intent of what we're trying to get at. And I understand that you can't, we can't prove that. I mean, if I and my House counterpart are negotiating on something in private, I don't know that anyone's going to know. But I don't think that that means we shouldn't have it in the rule.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Marty, just in terms of the conference meeting process, and let me focus on budget bills. At the outset, we'll have the fiscal analysts from each division work together, you know, House and Senate, to put together spreadsheets that we work from, the side-by-sides. So I assume that kind of staff work would go on as it has.
And even more than that. Yeah, there's often where the conference committee will say, here's some things that are similar language. We want staff to work together, pick out what's the best language. I think they're often directing staff to do that. That is not, again, those aren't matters of dispute. We're talking about the issues where the House wants one thing and the Senate wants something else, how you resolve those. The decision-making, not the more technical things or the explaining of things, because sometimes it's one House may feel strongly about something, the other House doesn't know what it is. Just simply letting them know why you feel that way, it may be persuasive to somebody, but it's not really a dispute.
Okay, that's, Mr. Chairman, that's helpful. Sir Lang, Seth isn't here today, but we'll have to run it by him.
The copy is coming out. Okay, should we deal with that language first? He's got some other suggestions here. But let's deal with that. Or we could just explain it all, I guess. Okay. Senator Marty, then you want to go to, we now have your A11 here. You want to go to page 2 then?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Page 2, the negotiations, and this would require that negotiations between the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker set targets or negotiate the budget must be open, along with meetings with the Governor to negotiate bills or set budget targets or negotiate the budget. And we specify if the Governor's negotiating with the Majority Leader, the Speaker, or the next page, Minority Leader of either House or Chair of a Standing Committee or a Division, that if they're negotiating with them, that should be open to the public. And I think this is something that, Senator Pogomil, you've often complained about the governor's unwillingness to be open on some of those negotiations. And I think, realistically, I don't think you can ever make that happen unless it's in the rules, and we have to comply with the rules, and therefore we are going to make these negotiations open. Again, the same provision. The idea that when there's something not in conflict, the governor could call you or you could call the governor and talk to him about your concerns. I really strongly object to your decision to do such and such. You'd be able to call and tell him that. You could talk about provisions in the bills. You could explain. You could each state your position, which are different. But if you're actually going to sit down and start trying to negotiate and work them out and how we're going to do it, those would be open to the public. And I think I heard from very many, it was even more so in the House than in the Senate, but a lot of the newer members were saying how very frustrated they were at the end of the last session that put all this work into it, and then people go in a room and they close the door and they out pops some legislation. And that's the point of this.
Mr. Chairman, to get it in front of us, I'll move it.
Pardon?
To get it in front of us.
Okay, Senator Cohen moves the A11.
And, Mr. Chairman, I realize that some of this would be a major change in the way things are done around here. I think it would be a positive change, but I'm open to partial steps as well.
Okay. Senator Marty, I don't know if you were here, but we got one partial step today, and the House is going to agree to location.
I appreciate that. I was here for that, and I was listening. I'm glad we agreed to that.
I had a proposal before the House that we had discussed here that on the joint rules, we would agree that no quorum of a conference committee could meet privately with conferees of the other body. At this point, the House is not willing to go that far. So I think the House will not accept 117 or 122. I mean, it's not going to happen. With regards to the second part, I just, as you know, I'm very sympathetic to the point you're trying to get at here, and I think we've got an agreement with the House this time that we're not going to sit down there with the governor for 2 or 3 weeks. But I think your language, I don't think your language is workable. I just don't think it's workable. So,
Chairman, don't we provide in our rules already that conference committees are open to the public and they're supposed to be meeting in the public?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Sarah Fredrickson, yes, and that's why they were meeting in public initially after the open meeting law and rules were passed. They were meeting and negotiating in public, and then people figured, because it's human nature, people figured, you know, it might be easier for us to do some of the tough negotiating behind closed doors. And I've been on conference committees, as you undoubtedly have been too, where actually things are negotiated in private and then it's kind of reenacted. I've actually been on some where it was basically reenacted. Well, the House, the two chairs or the two sides come to agreement, and in the conference committee, somebody, well, I'll propose that we do this, and somebody, well, we'd be willing to consider this if you'd accept that, just reenacting what had actually happened. And I think that's, we should be making the real thing happen in the conference committee, not the reenactment.
Well, Senator Murray, I'm kind of smiling because oftentimes about 2 or 3 in the morning, we're just trying to get something to happen, whether it's real or not real. We're just trying to get something to happen. Senator Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, I certainly agree with your observations and also the intent. And sometimes I think we've been forced into different types of negotiations. Quite honestly, senators tend to hang around here longer than House members do, and often Senate members, through their length and experience, are a little better negotiators in public. So sometimes I think when we allow that to happen, it's not to our advantage. But I'm not sure what the first part of this amendment, what first change, what that change is now from just saying that all the conference committees are open to the public. Perhaps a little more detail. I'm not sure it's any more likely to be followed.
Well, Senator Marty, aren't people just going to say, well, yeah, we were talking, but we weren't negotiating. We were just talking about provisions of the bill. I don't see how you...
Mr. Chairman, in terms of, first of all, enforcement of a rule is different than what the rule should be. I've been on plenty of conference committees where, and I've felt uneasy about it, but we get 5 Senate conferees or 3 Senate conferees together, and we'll meet with the chair or one of the members of the House Conference Committee and explain it and actually negotiate it and talk it all over and so on and put it together. And frankly, sometimes one of the 5 members of a conference committee aren't comfortable with it and say, you can't do it, and we change the practice then. But right now, you can't say there's anything wrong with it. I've seen times when you've had...
So, Mary, what you just described, mm-hmm. I had a rule that we were talking about here.
Right.
And I offered the House, and they didn't want to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are lots of House members who want to do it. I think House leadership may have a different feeling about it.
Here we have the Marty motion. Not the Marty motion. We have the Cohen motion in front of us, by request, I think. Any further discussion? Senator Cohen, do you want to do it all at once, or do you want to do separate parts of it?
Well, I wanted to make the motion to allow Senator Marty the opportunity to debate this with committee action. I guess that's up to the chairman as to how you want to handle the motion.
are you on this? Do you want to split it?
Sure, that would be fine.
So let's do lines 117 to 122 first. All in favor say aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion's not adopted. And then let's do 2.0 to 3.5. Question. All in favor say aye. All opposed? No.
No.
Motion's not adopted. Samari, thank you.
Thank you.
Samari, as you know, I'm not unsympathetic to where you're headed here. It's just that I've learned that this is going very slow steps. And this 24-hour rotation, I think, is kind of the most significant thing we're doing this year.
Maybe, and Mr. Chairman, I appreciate I'm persistent, too, and I know these things take a long time. And I've had these some rule changes for a number of years now. They've changed slightly to try and address concerns, but I understand.
Thank you. Okay, so now we have Senator Cohen moves the SCCR 002 as we amended it. We have the Frederickson motion, and then we have the Berglund motion to take 24 hours. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion adopted. Okay, then let's look at the permanent rules. Mr. Watson, go through the changes. Again, we have rules in place, and these would be changes to the rules that are in place.
Mr. Chairman, the first change is to Rule 8.2. That's on page 6, lines 10 to 13. This has to do with our requirement that an appointment that's not acted on by a committee within 60 legislative days is withdrawn. But this would say it doesn't apply if the appointee's term has expired or the appointee is no longer serving. The next change, Mr. Chairman, is to Rule 12.3. That's on page 8, lines 18 and 19, saying that a bill may not be considered on the day it was introduced except by a vote of two-thirds of the members of the committee, subcommittee, or division.
Okay.
The next change, Mr. Chairman, to Rule 18.1 is found toward the bottom of Rule...
Well, you missed 12.5. Line 12.5. Didn't you?
I was looking at line 11.31.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Moving the order of business of introduction and first reading of Senate bills from the 12th order of business to the 8th order of business.
Okay.
Next would be Rule 41.1, and that will be found on page 19 up at the top, saying that a member who is in the chamber during a roll call, including in the committee of the whole, has to vote upon the request of another member. You'll recall that there was some discussion about that a year ago, and Senator Senjum had a proposal to deal with that, that the committee talked about at one of its previous meetings. The final change is to Rule 53.1, and that is on the middle of page 23, line 23.22, saying that the Rules Committee's budget would be posted on the Senate website. That, too, responds to a proposal by Senator Senjum that would have affected the rule just a little bit further up in the page, 51.5 on the quarterly report of expenditures. Senator Senjum, you'll recall, had a proposal to have those reports distributed to every member of the Senate and posted on the Senate website. So that proposal is not included in this draft, but rather posting the budget is.
Okay, any discussion on any of those?
I'd make the motion, Mr. Chairman, to add these amendments to the...
to adopt those. Let me just ask on line 19.1 and 19.2. Mm-hmm. what has been the process during the committee of the whole? Can a member call for absentees during the middle committee of the whole today? Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, it was my understanding that they can't for anybody who is in the chamber, but they cannot impose, there's not a call of the Senate. They can't be required to be in the chamber. Colleen is telling me that that's not right.
No, you're correct.
Oh. So the way this would work is there's no requirement that you're in the chamber because you can't have a call of the Senate during committee of the whole. But if you're actually sitting there, a member could stand up and say,
vote.
Would they just say
absentees?
And then presumably if the member didn't want to vote, they could walk out of the room. I don't know that this resolves what some of the members would like, but I was trying to find a way to move the ball a little.
If you're sitting listening to the debate, why shouldn't you vote?
Are we comfortable with that?
That's fine.
If it's a big problem, you need more information or something.
Walk out of the room. It is. So, so on the Metzen motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Okay, so we're tentatively working all of that. I wish Senator Sinjin were here because why don't I put out on the table and let us decide whether to proceed or just wait for the Rules Committee. My suggestion, I'd like to. Remember, we've been talking about how to actually get information to people about budget targets and stuff. And what I'm with A14, I'm suggesting we delete Rule 7, or mostly delete Rule 7-7, which is that budget resolution, and instead have a focus on targets. Because I think, as we all know, the budget resolution can be, it creates some work, but it can always be done in a way where you don't really get the information anybody wants. And so what this would suggest is that we just get rid of the budget resolution and instead have a rule that says at least 14 days before the deadline for divisions of the Committee on Finance to act favorably on omnibus appropriations bills, targets for the general fund budget must be publicly announced. So the way this would work this year is that our deadline for the finance bills is a couple days after Easter Passover. What is that date? April 16th. And so if you back up 14 days from April 16th, that is April 2nd. So no later than April 2nd, there would be an announcement of what the finance committee targets are.
Mr. Chairman, the question that I have about this is, what happens then to the idea that people in the past sometimes have proposed amendments to budget bills that would make the budget bill exceed its target?
Senator Berglund, this would be simply an announcement of what the targets are. The body can do whatever it wants once the bills are on the floor.
Well, I understand that that is what happens if you have nothing to...
No, that's what would happen here, too. Because all this is an announcement of the targets.
But
basically,
I...
what would happen is the majority leader or the finance chair and the majority leader would tell people, hand out the piece of paper that says, here's what our finance committees are doing in their committee in terms of targets. And it would do it 2 weeks before the bills were coming out of the committees.
But I thought that in the past, when we did have a budget resolution, that then you couldn't exceed that in terms of proposing additional spending. Mr. Watson's shaking his head that I'm correct.
But that was not specific to each division. That was a general number, as I recall. Remember, it's basically a couple numbers you have there. Revenues can't exceed a number, and expenditures, Mr. Watson, what did that resolution actually have?
Mr. Chairman, there are two parts, and you can see the language of the old rule on lines 111 to 116. It talks about what would have to be in that budget resolution that was adopted by the whole Senate, which is just a limit on total revenue and total appropriations, the amount of the budget reserve and the cash flow account. So that's something that would be adopted by the whole Senate. Then there is a second step that starts on line 131. Within 14 days after the budget resolution, the Committee on Finance would adopt limits for each major appropriation bill. So that's the second step. Another 14 days, there would be targets for each of the bills. And then after that happened, then there would be limits on the appropriations in each of the bills that would be enforced on the floor. So it's a two-step process.
I just have to say that I have used this rule in the past, and I think it's a good discipline for everyone in the Senate to have to figure out how to pay for their proposals when they offer them.
So you think it makes sense to actually have the Senate adopt those targets prior to action on the floor of those bills?
I'm not so hung up on the mechanism for how the targets get set, but I do think this part of the old language that requires people then to have to live within whatever the target is in terms of making proposals is an appropriate discipline.
Does the Senate actually vote on that? Let me see. No. The committee must adopt it, and then that locks the full Senate in. That's the way it currently works now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Senator Cohen, what do you think about an approach like I'm suggesting here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I like it, although I wonder if there's a hybrid between what you're suggesting, what Senator Berglund suggests, to continue to try to maintain some fiscal discipline within the Senate without getting into all the convoluted stuff that we have right now in the rule, but to streamline it so that at least there's some internal discipline.
Okay, so we would your suggestion would be maybe a keep parts of 7.4. And would once we announce, let's say, so on the end of March or April 2nd, there's a public announcement of here's the targets the divisions are working on. You then perhaps are tweaking those as the bills come to the full Finance Committee. You at some point could adopt something in the Finance Committee that says this is what the targets are. Would that be what could then be the hybrid in terms of 7.4?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to think about that. I don't have a good answer offhand. That's possible. But would the action of the committee be enforceable on the floor?
Apparently it has been.
Mr. Chairman, it would be 228 to 2. Further on. 29,
after adoption of the resolution. Adoption of the resolution by the must reconcile each bill. So did we pass a separate resolution? Okay, that's the part I'm missing here. What affects the division targets currently under this rule? What makes those effective on this, in the full Senate? Is there a rule?
Mr. Chairman, under the rule, the adoption by the Finance Committee of those division targets would be binding on the whole Senate.
That's what happens today. Yeah,
yeah. Well, it did happen.
Well, weird,
Mr. Chairman, it would happen today if those limits were adopted. But as you know, in the 10 or 15 years we've had the rule in place, there's only been about once or twice when the Finance Committee actually adopted those limits. So most of the time, they have not actually been in place.
So is it true what Senator Berglund said? She may have, by moral force, done
yes.
that, but we never really had a rule that said...
No, I've asked the president to rule on this, and, you know, it must have been in years when we actually did adopt something. And there have been rulings that the amendment would be out of order.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
we've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because on 229, an amendment to a bill is out of order if it falls any of the limits specified in either resolution to be exceeded. So if you spent more money,
you could have fight it somewhere else.
You haven't done that in recent years, apparently, because Mr. Watson said.
No, the last time I wanted to do it, somebody told me I couldn't do it because the other triggering point hadn't been done. But I that doesn't mean I don't think that it's a bad idea. That I think it's a good idea to require the rules to have, to require members to have some fiscal discipline. You know, it's always easy to say, oh, well, you know, I'm for this, so I'm going to have an amendment that says we're going to increase spending for this. You know, that's easy to do. And then, you know, people maybe who want to be responsible have to vote against it, but it's much harder to say, well, this is my priority, so something else that somebody else's priority, I would suggest we reduce that priority. That's a much more honest discussion to have. And that kind of an amendment would be in order.
Mr. Chairman, your attempt is to take a rule that, of 2.5 pages or so that's been basically ignored and to try to simplify it in a way that would make it workable within the Senate. So I don't have the exact language, but maybe the rule's a hybrid that, let me suggest something and then argue against a piece of it. to take the language on page 2, at least 14 days before the deadline, targets for the general fund budget must be publicly announced and approved by the Finance Committee. Then keep the language on 7.7 of lines 2.28 to 2.30. I don't know if you want to keep the direction to the Senate on how you rule amendments in or out of order. Now, the argument against it is that within the Finance Committee, once we get bills to the floor, you know, we're done making changes with targets. But while the bills are all within the Finance Committee, we want to tie the hands of the Finance Committee and the chairman if there's a problem with this budget. And we think we need to do, you know, once the targets are announced, we're not going to turn the whole thing upside down. That's never happened.
But there could be tweaking.
Yeah, so what I suggest might prevent the tweaking. So maybe we could have an anti-tweaking or a pro-tweaking portion of it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there's a rule that says that the Finance Committee approves something, the Finance Committee can change it. Yeah, they can amend it or change it at a later time if they chose to do that.
Yes. How about an amendment? Take the part that I suggested or some version of that, and then a rule that basically says any amendment on the floor has to balance. The amendment itself has to balance. And so it doesn't matter if it fits into some larger picture. The amendment itself has to balance, and that solves a whole array of problems. Because then it doesn't even have to balance relative to a particular budget range.
That doesn't have to balance against what?
Itself. If you're spending money, you got to pay for it.
Got to get it somewhere else. That's easier.
What happens if an amendment is drafted that would take money from a budget bill that's already been passed by the Senate to pay for its amendment?
But then it would have to say, and I'm taking the money from that other place.
Right, but that other place has already spent that money and the bill's left the seventh floor.
Mr. Chairman, I think in the past we've always said it had to be from within that current
bill. So it has to balance within the bill.
Within the bill.
And what,
that's a little bit of frustration to those of us in the Republican caucus, too, because maybe we would want to spend more on education than the target has been set, you know, and we aren't able to take money, say, from environmental natural resources to education because we have to stay within that silo.
But it doesn't work very well if environment and transportation is gone.
Right, exactly.
Left the floor and you want to then change that budget by putting more in another budget.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we stay where we are? We will take up the joint rules on the floor. Let's hold, particularly with David and Matt here, let's hold with the, we know where we are in the general Senate rules here now, with the suggestion that I would like to try to get rid of Rule 7 and do something that might work. Let's continue to think about that and see if we can't come up with something in the next few days that accomplishes what the majority and minority would like. Because otherwise what will happen is we just never take up the permanent Senate rules on the floor, and we'll have Rule 7 and we'll game it like we have in the past, and nobody will be satisfied.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what you're... I think I would agree with that sentiment that, you know, we have a rule that is either unworkable, ignored, is so cumbersome that it doesn't meet what was originally intended. And if there's a way to simplify that and yet still keep the Senate operating, you know, we think we can do that fairly easily.
Well, let's think about it. And Senator Frederickson, I solicit suggestions. I've been trying to figure out a way to accomplish this so we could all just feel better about what we're doing there. And it would be more transparent, whatever we're doing.
I might add, Mr. Chairman, just while we're thinking about it over the next few days, since we haven't been implementing this rule, I have had budget busters go on my bill.
Well, I recall one point where it actually was a good thing for the Senate, that we put a COLA in last year, the year before, and it was really strongly bipartisan. And informally, we went and found the money. We took it out of a different place. So in that instance, that was a good thing. It was a Rose Amendment, and it spent real money. But it busted a target that you had, but it busted in a way where we actually paid for it and people felt comfortable.
Well, after the fact, we did. But it could happen that we couldn't have found the money. Yeah.
Right, but we didn't actually put that amendment on until we knew where we were going to get the money. I remember the discussion. We were in the back of the room, we started calling you and Rosen and said, here's the way we can do this.
Right, but I'm just using it as an example of if you couldn't find the money and somebody wanted to do the amendment anyway.
All right.
Well, the reason I mentioned the counter example was because there are some times when you want to get some work done jointly that everybody wants to get done. So, okay, thank you. So we will, the joint rules, we'll try to take those up on the floor next week. The permanent rules, if we can come up with something there, Rule 7, we could meet next week and get those up on the floor Thursday too, perhaps. So, thank you, members. Appreciate it. Meeting adjourned.
All right.
I guess so.
I sat through the whole thing, too.
We're real proud.